Honey, can you pour me some water?
Yeah, sure.
This year, United Way helped provide over 29,627 prescriptions for the uninsured and gravely ill in Wichita. We called upon 65 pharmacies, 100 social services, and 604 volunteer physicians. Together, we helped over 1,623 patients cope with pneumonia, hepatitis, even cancer. And it doesn't matter.
How do you feel?
The number of pills and programs doesn't really matter. What matters is each new day they make possible.
I feel great.
What matters? United Way.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Through the afternoon, we saw a partly cloudy, upper 50s sort of afternoon. We'll deal with 43 overnight and only a slight chance of showers. Partial cloudiness on Friday as we greet the weekend with a high of 63. Saturday will be dry, mostly sunny, and a bit warmer at 67.
WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR. WWNR Beckley.
Tonight, Head On the Bodkin Kickoff. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, we're working for you. Now, Bodkin Kick.
Hey, good evening. Almost 7 minutes after 7 o'clock, like it always is when Head On premieres, this being a Thursday night edition of your nightly confrontation with the facts. I'm Bob Kincaid. Glad to have you with me. Glad to be with you. The phone numbers, they'll take care of the basic business right off the top. The phone numbers, locally 252-6200, outside Beckley 800-620-WWNR, that's 9967. I wish people would stop leaving their styrofoam cups in the workspace. Not that I'm a neat freak or anything, because God knows I'm not. The internet stream, of course, WWNRNewsTalk620.com, WWNRNewsTalk620.com. I don't think we'll ever get that on a bumper sticker. And you can go through that portal, through the portal there to my website, HeadOnRadio.com, wherein I maintain for you lots of discussion. Argument, fracas, carrying on, a little battleground to learn how to do in-your-face fighting with some resident wingnuts. They're there, and it's a proving ground for liberals to learn how to fight back. Instead, oh please quit saying nasty things about us, or we'll sing Kumbaya again. Really, we will. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to get up. You got to smack them in the face, and you got to show them. You got to show them to be the addle-pated boobies that they are. That's how you do it. And of course, you can also send email bob@headonradio.com. It's reliable, and it's only a click away. So, any means by which you choose to join us. Congratulations go out again to the folks who are standing up with. The nurses who have been abused over at ARH, lots of honking, lots of beeping in support of those hardworking men and women who were, suppressed, oppressed? You know, it's a heavy-handed word. And again, it's another film reference that always carries me back to my, help, help, I'm being repressed, bloody peasant. And you know, to get something clear, and I think other people share my feelings on this. Where I stand up with these nurses is the fact that they exercised their First Amendment rights, and they were, doggone it, what kind of word are you going to look for? Abused for doing it. Again, remember, these nurses were not on the clock; they were on their own time. They were not on company property; they were on private property. They weren't throwing Molotov cocktails. It wasn't even a picket. It was merely an informational rally, as is covered under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. And their civil rights were violated because they were retaliated against by their management. but others are standing with them. And by golly, it's a good thing to see. It makes you proud to be an American. It really does. And lots of people running up and down the road there in front of the hospital, honking in their support. That's how it starts. It's effortless. Just a wave, a honk, and you get the pleasure of feeling like a real American. Hey, gum, that's good. So congratulations. And you know, I don't know how long the picketing is going to go on. I think it'll be there again tomorrow. Just encouraging folks to stand with working people. Stand with their own ones, folks just like you. Yeah, because even that honk, that little beep on the car horn, that is a manifestation of your First Amendment rights. And it's beautiful to watch it happen. Now, an email. We talked about Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. And I got a couple of quotes from our FOB, friend of Bob, Scotty. He writes two of my favorite quotes from Wealth of Nations, because we had mentioned the fact that while right-wing avarice worshippers constantly cite Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations as an excuse for unbridled corporatism, that Adam Smith would not recognize the corporate structure that exists in this country today. So Scotty sends me a couple of quotes. One, the violence and injustice of the rulers of mankind is an ancient evil for which, I am afraid, the nature of human affairs can scarce admit of a remedy. But the mean rapacity, the monopolizing spirit of merchants and manufacturers, who neither are nor ought to be the rulers of mankind, though it cannot perhaps be corrected, may very easily be prevented from disturbing the tranquility of anyone but themselves. And secondly, the government of an exclusive company of merchants is, perhaps, the worst of all governments for any country whatever. 1776, Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations. The subject header on the email from Scotty: Adam Smith hates Republican fascists. Yeah, he does. The government of an exclusive company of merchants is, perhaps, the worst of all governments for any country whatever. Chew on that one for a little bit and compare it with what we've got now. Who writes our national energy policy? That would be ExxonMobil, Texaco, Shell, Mobil, Conoco, BP, Phillips, whatever. Okay. Who writes our defense policy? Not the Defense Department. No. GE. And Rockwell. And Martin Marietta and Grumman. And they write our defense policy. Who wrote the bankruptcy law? Why, the bankruptcy lobbyists on K Street wrote our bankruptcy law. Who's writing the new lending law that's snaking and slithering its way through the House of Representatives right now? That's right, the banking industry wrote it. And your job as a working, hard-working American trying to get by from day to day, oh, what's the line from the old Jimmy Buffett song? I'm just trying to get by being quiet and shy in a world full of pushing and shoving. Your job is to be quiet and shy, and to keep your mouth shut, and to not challenge authority when authority tells you that you must bow down. That's your job. If your job, should you choose to accept it. I choose not to accept it. How about you? I oppose that kind of fascism. How about you? You'd be surprised how good it feels when you stand up and recognize and realize that you are, in fact, free. Free to oppose this kind of corporatist avarice. What was the number we heard? 300 times the average worker's salary for any given CEO? What would you do? A survey question, maybe. What would you do if you were, like, say, a Walton heir? What would you do with $25 billion? Can you eat $25 billion worth of anything? Can you drink $25 billion worth of anything? Can you wear $25 billion worth of anything? Drive $25 billion worth of anything? Well, I don't even know if you could build a $25 billion house. What would you do? Jesse would buy Canada. I don't know. I'm more tropical minded. I'm thinking Belize. You got the Mayan ruins, you got the beaches, you got the beautiful waters, and they speak English. $25 billion, what would you do with it? What do you need with it? What, the little tins of caviar that are $5,000 a pop? How, you could eat it every day and still have, what do you need with that kind of money? And yet we're being told that that's capitalism, that's the free market, Bob. Bob, that's the way God intended. God meant them people to be rich, and they're rich. It's the work and wonder of the will of the Almighty. No, it's not. It's the working wonder of the will of the avaricious. Now, we got to take our break. But, let's see. In radio, you usually do twofers on Tuesday. But this is going to be two for Thursday. You're going to enjoy it, too. Oh, this is going to be fun. Two for Thursday on Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Where there's a tornado,
where there's a forest fire,
where Mother Nature is at her worst,
where there's a search
and there's a rescue,
where there are Americans in need,
where
disaster strikes,
or one volunteer force
helping each other and simply doing what needs to be done,
we are the Civil Air Patrol,
the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force.
To join, call 1-800-FLY-2338
or log on to the World Wide Web at www.cap.gov.
Nearly 70 million Americans, men, women, the old, and the young, share a common enemy, arthritis. Make a difference in the fight against arthritis. Team up with Colony Drug, the Arthritis Foundation, and Southern Communications for Beckley's second Arthritis Walk, Thursday, May 19th, on the McManus Rail Trail at New River Park. Have fun and help fight the nation's leading cause of disability, arthritis. Form a team with your friends and family. For details, call Colony Drug and Wellness Center at 252-5305 and join us May 19th for a walk in the park.
Number 400,610.
Number 400,611.
Number 400,000.
This year, United Way helped train over 400,000 jobless people.
100,902.
700,000.
We took more than 700,000 homeless off the streets and gave them shelter. We helped provide quality child care for over 1 million families.
1,200,000.
But none of the numbers really matter. What matters to United Way are the people behind them.
My name is Mary.
The independence we help restore.
My name is David.
The communities we unite. The newfound optimism. The sense of purpose and of community coming together.
Louisa.
Michael.
Those results go beyond the numbers. And for United Way, that's what matters. For more information, go to your local United Way. Log on to UnitedWay.com.
He's got a voice, and he's not afraid to use it. Liberally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, it's two for Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Got a couple of dandy moments in moral values republicanism. First, U.S. Representative Don Sherwood, a Republican of Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania. Yeah, Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania. Somewhere in northeast PA, I think. He's a family values Republican, voted vociferously for the Defense of Marriage Act, and well, not a couple of months ago, September 15th, a few months ago, not quite a year. There was a 911 call on September 15th from Cynthia Orr. Cynthia Orr is 29 years old. Mr. Sherwood is considerably, shall we say, older than that. Mr. Sherwood's also married. He's a moral values Republican, remember? September 15th, Cynthia Orr picks up the telephone. She was at Don Sherwood's moral values Republican Congressman Don Sherwood's bathroom in his D Street apartment. She had run to the bathroom and locked herself inside. She called 911 and told the operators that moral values upstanding good godly Republican Don Sherwood had choked her for no apparent reason while giving her a back rub. A back rub. Yeah, come over here, honey. Let me give you a back rub there. Yeah, you're going to love this here back rub. Yeah.
But Don, that's not my back.
Yeah. I give great back rubs. That's it.
Why, you...
And it starts choking her. Now, this relationship with Sherwood has been going on since 1999 when... let's see, do the math, 04, 4, 5, 9. So when she was 24 years old, kind of reminds you of Chandra Levy, I guess. Now, no charges were filed or charges were withdrawn. But again, Mr. Sherwood has been in an ongoing relationship with Cynthia Orr since 1999. Now, this guy, back when Newt Gingrich was trying to shove the Defense of Marriage Act down America's throat at the same time that he was banging his congressional staffer like a cheap Chinese gong and crying about the moral deficiencies of Bill Clinton, you can hardly do this story without giggling a little bit. Yeah, Don Sherwood was one of his biggest supporters. We've got to defend marriage in America. That's right. We've got to defend marriage. Cynthia, honey, come over here. Daddy needs a back rub. Yeah, that's good. Ooh, yeah, scratch right there. Yeah, Sherwood was out there in the forefront of defending the Defense of Marriage Amendment. At the same time, he was philandering on his wife. God, I love these Republicans. Is there a single one that is not utterly, hopelessly, totally corrupt? I wonder if Don Sherwood's ever met Slick Vic Sprouse. He's another one of those family values Republicans, you know. So that's again, it's a twofer Thursday. That's number one. Don Sherwood, upstanding defender of the institution of marriage as a relationship between one man and one woman, and may one 29-year-old girlfriend at your D Street apartment. Oh, but wait, there's more. It's a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. It not only cuts tomato cans, it'll slice right through a tomato. After three, guy named Jim West. No, not from the TV show or the movie featuring Will Smith. Jim West, he's a portly, doughy-faced, jowly sort of, fat, nasty, white guy Republican. Because there's so many, lest you for a minute think that he might be a black Republican. It's taken 3 years, but the Spokesman Review of Spokane, Washington has published, this takes some time, there's some serious reading, a package of stories, just one after the other, after the other, after the other, about Jim West. They sort of got a hint of the story in 2002 when they were reporting about priestly rape in the Catholic Church. And at that point, there were rumors circulating about Jim West, who is not a priest. And as a result of those rumors, two of his closest friends, one of them a sheriff's deputy and the other a Boy Scout leader, oh God, here we go again, they both committed suicide. Well, Jim West is mayor of Spokane, like I said. Jim West is also has also been a longtime member of the legislature in the state of Washington, and every time the opportunity came along, he stood up to, well, you know how it is with the with those filthy right-wing hypocrite Republicans. He stood up to try to suppress human rights. See, I don't believe there's such a thing as gay rights. I don't believe that. No, there are human rights. If we're human, gay, straight, whatever, you're human, okay? So it is a human rights issue. I don't care if I never hear gay rights again so long as I live. And the gay community would do well to shut up about gay rights and start talking about human rights. So anyway, every time a bill would come up that would afford rights to all classes of humanity, Jim West was there to try to shout it down. Now, Jim West, as I said, is the Republican mayor of Spokane. He's upright. He's upstanding. He's a godly man, Jim West is. Well, what it turns out is West sexually molested little boys when he served as a Boy Scout leader and the sheriff's deputy in the late 70s. That's why two of his closest friends, one a scout leader, one a sheriff's deputy, offed themselves. And a man named Robert J. Gallagher has claimed in a court deposition that West molested him in the mid-70s when he was a little boy. Another man, a second man, Michael G. Grant, said that West did the same thing to him when he was a little boy and a Boy Scout. Now, West, according to the paper, the editor of the paper, Stephen Smith, says, West has led a secret life for more than 25 years. Beyond the serious allegations of sexual abuse, he's been using his position in the legislature to block gay rights legislation, just like what I told you. And he's been trolling the internet for little boys while serving as the mayor of Spokane, offering gifts and favors. There's your Republican Party. There's those moral values voters. You see, the Republicans deserve this. They deserve to be hammered. Because what you fail to understand is they put themselves... Do you not remember the day after the election? Well, Bill, it would appear that moral values turned the tide yesterday for George W. Bush. There were anti-gay marriage amendments in blah, 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 blah states. And moral values voters came out in droves, like cockroaches running across the floor when you turn on the light. They came out to vote for moral values and George W. Bush. And it turned out they voted for child molesters. Oh, bravo, Republicans! You damn doofuses! How do you look in the mirror in the morning? Jim West, the BTK killer. The Carol Smith. The creep in Nashville. The creep in Texas. The other creep in Texas. The creep in Florida. The gay guy trolling gay.com or whatever. The Family Values Republican congressman from Virginia. Philandering Republican, Representative Don Sherwood. That sicko Rick Santorum playing with dead babies. You guys are batting a million. And there are still some people that think they're Republicans because they represent traditional American family values. God, I'd hate to. I wouldn't hate to. I'd love to see you go to a psychiatrist and explain what those values are. I believe in diddling children, doctor. That's my Republican family values. Sick, 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 sick party. And you guys have, and you know, you have them camped out in your party. Sick. So there's your two for Thursday. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Governor Manchin says it would have been easy for him to veto two controversial bills, but instead he decided to sign them and make some changes later. The governor was up till midnight deadline last night, deciding whether to sign the judicial pay raise bill and the measure that doubles the monthly 911 fee for cell phone owners. He said he signed the pay raise bill after considering where the salaries for West Virginia judges rank with surrounding states. He says if the state is to move forward, it must retain and recruit qualified judges. But the governor has promised to make two changes in connection with the legislation.
We will correct this pension system that the judicial system has now, which is much too lucrative, and it must be brought in line with what we can afford to pay for, so that we don't go upside down again. And the other thing I was not in favor of is when they put the Board of Public Works and myself, the governor, I said, we should be evaluated the same as all public employees this fall, which we will do.
The governor also signed the 911 bill, which doubles the emergency fees on cell phones to $3. It also increases the share collected by all but four counties, Berkeley, Cabell, Kanawha, and Mercer. The governor says he signed the bill because of public safety concerns. Lincoln County Circuit Clerk Greg Stowers has been accused of participating in a conspiracy to buy votes in elections that go back clear to 1990. Stowers was one of five people named in a 12-count superseding indictment handed down Tuesday by a federal grand jury in Beckley. The indictment was unsealed today. The commander at Fort Hood, Texas, has some decisions to make in the Lindy England case. Yesterday, a military judge tossed out the Army private's guilty plea to charges of abusing Iraqi prisoners. The trial was abruptly ended during testimony by reputed abuse ringleader Charles Grainer, who the judge said contradicted England's previous testimony. Fayette County Prosecutor's Office has been removed from the investigation of that fatal shooting at a Fayetteville funeral home last week. Circuit Judge Charles Vickers has ruled that Prosecutor Paul Blake's association with the funeral home's co-owner would create an appearance of partiality had he stayed on the case. That's the news. Now the forecast for the rest of this evening. Partly cloudy with temperatures mid-50s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low 42. Partly cloudy tomorrow, low 60s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low near 42. Saturday, sunny, upper 60s. And then for Mother's Day, sunny, with a high near 78. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The San Francisco hotel standoff is once again moving toward its boiling point. 37 protesters were taken into protective custody by police on Tuesday. They were a portion of a 500-strong contingent of Unite Here Local 2 employees who marched on the San Francisco Hilton. The demonstration came out of frustration over a contract negotiation stalemate between the union and 14 downtown hotels. The two sides had agreed to a cooling-off period last November after a 2-week strike and 6-week lockout. Health, contract length, wages, and pensions are all concerns of the workers.
AFL-CIO spokeswoman Lane Windham says 106 staff jobs in all at the Labor Federation are being eliminated not because of financial problems, but in a reorganization.
This is not because we don't have any money. We are making these changes with limited resources and reallocating those resources to better meet the goals of increasing organizing and focusing on member mobilization for politics.
167 jobs are being defunded and 61 others are being created. Windham thinks this reorganization will make the AFL-CIO a more effective advocate for working families.
The restructuring and the reorganization will absolutely make the AFL-CIO stronger and make the organization in a better position to be able to really effectively, you know, help workers organize and to mobilize for politics and legislation. Essentially, what's happening is there's going to be more cash freed up into organizing and into mobilization for politics and legislation.
The National Hockey League and the Players Association will be back at the bargaining table starting today. It will be the first bargaining session in more than 2 weeks. They will meet six times over the next 3 weeks, attempting to end a bitter lockout that caused the 2004-2005 season to collapse.
Workers at Angelica Laundry may launch a nationwide strike today as they struggle to win improvements in pay and working conditions. Unite Here, the union representing Angelica workers, has pledges of support from the SEIU and Teamsters. 14 of Angelica's 33 plants are in California. Workers complain of safety violations and say they handle dirty laundry contaminated with blood and feces without proper protections. Angelica has a record of government fines for safety violations. The union says the average wage for Angelica workers is $10 per hour.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. As U.S. consumer interest shifts from SUVs to hybrids, Ford and GM are watching a steady march to Asian car dealerships. While overall auto sales in April went up by 1.8%, GM saw sales drop 7.7% and Ford sold 5% fewer cars. Toyota, home of the hybrid Prius, had big gains of 21.3%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR Beckley.
A man who just loves conservators, baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Let's go straight to the phones, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening.
How are you?
Reasonably well, yourself?
Oh, I'm beyond reasonable.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm just dandy. But, you know, especially the little right-wing monkeys that hang on my every word.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
He's unreasonable. He's a screamer.
Yeah, I've heard that this afternoon. You know,
And the guy got that out of 3 minutes.
I know. I had a friend who worked as a waiter in Washington while he was in school at Georgetown, and he would have some of these, I guess, stereotypical rich Republican types come in, you know, with their girlfriends and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd stiff him for the tip.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, they'd pay with a check, you know.
Right.
He'd get the phone number, call up, home phone number, and say, "Hi, this is Scott over at the In-N-Out Motel. Listen, I know that you were here with your husband, and I know you're that very attractive young blonde in her 20s, but you left some of your private garments here, and how can we best return them to you?"
And,
you know,
God knows they deserve it.
Jim. Oh yeah, I know it.
And again, you know, just for those who might be slightly confused about all of this, I don't care what anybody does in their private consensual sex lives. I really don't care. But when you get up and you stand and we've got to defend marriage. Marriage must be defined as an adversity between one man and one woman. Blah, 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 or the dogs will get involved. Blah 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 blah. When you do that, you're serving notice to the world that you feel like they can look at your life and find you a picture, a literal paragon of moral values and virtue. And then when it turns out you got a girlfriend.
Or boyfriend.
You deserve to be hammered. Or like this guy, if you're trolling chat rooms for little boys.
Or tea rooms, whichever.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I do want to say, though, gay people will stop shouting for gay rights when they are truly given human rights.
Right.
And not before.
Right, and I think maybe...
And they don't need to shut up about gay rights until they're given...
No, I'm not telling them to shut up, Jim. I'm telling them to understand. I'm trying to get people to understand. There's no such thing as gay rights. There are only human rights. Because when the gay community sets itself apart and says that there is something called gay rights as opposed to human rights, they automatically ghettoize themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I understand that. Certainly I do. But, you know, so many of these people have been so subjected to a lot of bad treatment.
Oh, God, yes.
And, you know, they have become extremely militant. That's the reason you have the rise of organizations like Queer Nation. And I remember back in 1994, I saw this. I saw them put a condom the size of a Hindenburg over at Jesse Helms' house. They sure did.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I mean, they had a hot air machine and everything. I mean, they literally tended the house like you would if you were going to exterminate for termites.
Well,
Jesse comes home, and there is a huge rubber inflated the size of a dirigible over his modest Arlington home.
Well, I was reading somewhere, and I saw one commentator who said gay, and he was talking about typical Southern redneck, nasty, hateful Republicanism, and he said, you know, gay is the new black.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and Bob, when you go to the mall, I don't know if you've ever been there when they displayed the AIDS quilt.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Well, if you've ever walked along that quilt and you have looked at the names and you've looked at the work and the artists, the craftsmanship and the love that has gone into each and every panel, I mean, you realize that was once a living, viable human being who had lots to contribute to the world.
Oh, yeah.
And there is an awful lot of angst that is built up in some of these people. And I can certainly understand their desiring of gay rights.
Yeah.
I just thought I would throw that out.
I understand that. I'm just trying to, I keep trying to at least pass the information out there about the idea of debate framing.
Okay.
And by allowing, because, you know, what they're seeking are human rights. It's the other side. It's these nasty, vitriolic, hate-filled, the religion industry poisoned right-wing Republicans that are calling them gay rights.
But you know, Bob, I want you to look at something. The GOP's rise to power was predicated on the most unnatural ideological coalition imaginable. You've got cosmopolitan corporate suits arm in arm with rancid right-wing populists.
Yeah.
And these events basically are straining at these events that are happening now with George Bush and the failure of his presidency. And he is really in it up to his ankles. I mean, let's face it. He boasted about his political capital. He's bankrupt.
Well, he is. And that sort of plays into, I mentioned some of the infighting that's beginning to go on inside the bizarre religion industry right about Laura Bush's comments last Saturday, Jim.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I mean, even if they can't agree on that and the First Lady's effort to try to, you know, pull a little Nancy Reagan soft shoe like she's back in 82, well, hey, I think it's great. Anything that will fragment them.
But you've got to understand what's going on there because... And sometimes trying to sort out the spin makes your eyes roll back in your head when it's, you know, when you're dealing with what the Republicans do. Putting Laura up on that podium to tell dirty jokes about her husband
and the male horse.
Yeah, and the, you know, and I mean, basically making gay jokes about her husband. She did it. I'm not. It's just what she did. There was a reason for that, because America perceives. And polling data suggests time after time that America thinks that the Bushes are way, way too sucked up against a bunch of truly bizarre Taliban religion industrialists.
Oh, so that was to make them appear a little more human.
Well, it was a sort of a nod and a nudge and a wink to normal America to let them know that, you know, we're not really. See, we can tell dirty jokes.
Oh.
That's what it was, and that's why the press corps sat there and giggled and clapped and chuckled.
Well, you know, that's fine. That was just one night, and that's going to be forgotten, really. But, I mean, let's look at how George Bush has been spending his political capital. Well, he's invested in, you know, some pretty grand adventures, and the market's gone south on him.
Mm-hmm.
Dow Jones Index is way down.
Well, what happened to Ford and GM today shouldn't happen to a dog.
All right.
But
Tom DeLay is that much closer to Angola, and I don't mean Angola, Africa.
No, we mean Louisiana.
Exactly.
Where the boys are.
And Bill Frist, of course, our own Dr. Mengele in the Senate, is looking a little wobbly, too, if he threatens to launch some type of parliamentary jihad against, on the behalf of right-wing preachers, demanding that there be a, quote, in his estimation, Jesus-friendly judiciary. And look at how George Bush's great reform of Social Security effort is. I mean, you know, basically.
The wheels are off.
People in Washington are going to grab that third rail for a lame duck president.
Right. And I mean, George is quacking already.
And all of in his carefully orchestrated democracy in Iraq, what's happening there? Chalabi's in charge, and he's just about as bad, if not worse, than Saddam, in my opinion.
Chalabi will be maximum dictator for life.
You got it.
Inside of a year.
He's trying to put John Bolton, his stand-up tough guy, in the UN, even his own fellow Republicans, saying, are you nuts? And then, of course, gas prices are at $2.50. Hourly workers' wages are falling. And the economy's softening, and so are Bush's poll numbers. So I think his, you know, political capital is wealth sending him into bankruptcy.
Well, I don't think there's going to be a lot of coattails in 06 in the midterms.
No, I don't think so.
But then again, that is also predicated on the notion, Jim, that the Democratic Party will have some stones about them.
Well, let's hope so.
And get up and provide voters an alternative.
As long as it does, this is what's going to happen. They're pulling the control rods out of a nuclear furnace that were placed there by the New Deal, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the New Deal's concept was to give everybody a piece of the pie. And as long as people have a piece of the pie, property they can, you know, buy and hold on to, their piece of the American pie, so to speak, everything would be copacetic, basically. At least people would be on the street corners or marching in the streets. Or worse, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to create an urban, landless proletariat, you are awakening a sleeping giant.
No, I think you are, Jim.
And I'll tell you something, and this is something my dad taught me, and I've always believed in this. Whenever I've been at loggerheads or in a battle or fight or whatever with somebody, he said, son, don't ever put a man in a position where he's got nothing to lose. Because if you do, you're either going to kill him or he's going to kill you.
That's what
they're doing to people. Slowly but surely, they're taking your pensions and the people having to give their homes up to pay their medical bills. They're placing an entire class of people, and there are more of those people than there are the rich oligarchs, into a position where they have nothing to lose.
Well, and the thing is, they haven't figured out yet just exactly what kind of dangerous ground they're on, Jim. It's like son of bankruptcy bill slithering through the House even as we speak.
Yeah, I know about this.
This is the banking bill, the lending bill.
Mm-hmm.
And
all of it offered by the American Banking Association.
Right, and it's you can see some details of it at Sirota Blog, SIROTABLOG.
Right.
Again, I think it's going to be critical to see if Democrats know how to be Democrats and oppose this monstrosity.
Basically, what is the fuel that keeps banks and these corporations running? It is a consumer, right?
Right.
And if consumers don't have any money to spend, what's going to happen to these people and their companies?
Well,
they're literally destroying their own power base.
But this is about short-sighted avarice by the corporate top honchos, the CEOs, the COOs, the CFOs, and by the time that day comes that you're describing, Jim, they will have gotten their multi-million-dollar handshakes and they'll be drinking frou-frou drinks with umbrellas in them somewhere in the Caribbean.
Oh, I don't think they'll escape to do that, Bob. I think they'll be found. and brought back here for the trial.
Well, maybe if we can restore the democratic principles of this republic. They
well,
don't exist
you know,
right now.
What I'm trying to say here is this, and you've heard me here before, we might not have the luxury of that type of situation. We may be placing ourselves in a position where an unusual man is going to come along with an unusual solution. You think about that.
Oh, I know. Jim, I appreciate it. Got to roll along.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
Out of here.
All right. And let's see. Wayne. Hey, Wayne, you're head on. Wayne.
Hey, man.
Hey, what's going on?
You know, same old, same old.
Yeah.
We're out there today again.
Yes, indeed. I appreciate
and,
it.
I don't know. Am I supposed to acknowledge that you stopped by? I mean, is that a bad thing?
No, that's a good thing. I was proud to be there.
Okay, well, I was proud to have you there, brother. Proud to have you there. In fact, there were a lot of good people there.
Yeah.
You know, this was kind of a spare-of-the-moment thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just let it be known this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, I don't care if you belong to a union, don't belong to a union. If you support these people and think we're right, stop by and see us. You know, we're not asking you to stay there all day or anything like that.
No.
And some of the people showed up. Ed.
Yeah.
Ed that calls this program.
Yeah.
I hope Ed could still hear this. You know what I mean by somebody to watch your back?
Oh, yeah.
I'd trust my back to that man any day.
Absolutely.
That is a good, solid man right there.
Yep.
And I will defend him forever. And, you know, we have some misconceptions, and some people get wound up. And I think that that's why I always like people to meet each other, even adversaries.
Yeah.
You know, once you look a guy in the eye, it's a lot harder to stick a knife in his back.
That's true.
It really is. You know, and so... And I think that's what's happening with a lot of things here.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that we are framing the issue appropriately, Wayne.
Okay.
There are there at the hospital there is a dispute or a concern over patient safety.
Yes. Right.
Okay. I'm not really part of that debate, as I see it. What,
well, I'm not either, but yeah, I don't know the intimacies
right,
of that debate.
Right. And what concerns me is that these nurses didn't strike, didn't picket. They took their own time. They weren't on the clock. They weren't on company time or property. And they expressed their opinion and shared facts with people. And for that, they were punished. Now, the way I read the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, that is a pure and simple violation of their civil rights.
There is absolutely no doubt in my mind.
So that's what we're supporting, is their exercise of their civil rights.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. I don't know the situation. I don't know the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, yesterday I called up Dr. Bill's show, and I told the people, listen, we don't want you not to come to this facility. We want you to use the facility. We're not boycott. We're not doing anything, you know. What we're doing is supporting these people's First Amendment rights.
Union, non-union.
No, I don't care.
Right.
American.
Yeah, right. Are you an American?
Natural. I don't care,
yeah.
You know.
They're your rights. We support your exercise of them.
Yes. And, you know, these people are getting carried away. And when I say these people, that's the whole problem. See, the corporations have become a people.
Well, they are by law defined as persons.
Yeah, well, these are very...
But they're immortal persons.
Yes. Well, and they're not very moral
either.
Person.
Right.
Now, I will fight for these people's rights to the end. That's all I have to know. I'm sure that we'll learn more.
Right. Well, and again.
And in fact, today I found out that there was a meeting there. They called in all nine nurses that were involved.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, great. Well, you know, somebody told me that during the day. And I said, great, maybe this will be resolved. You know, Mr. Massey guy.
Yeah.
Called them all in. I thought, well, good, man. He's going to apologize to him. He said, look, you know, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I had a bad day. You know, you won't, we're going to take or pay you for your suspended day. And, we're going to rip up those letters.
Yeah.
He called the meeting to expressly explain to them, I didn't say that word right, I don't think, but, that they're not going to do that.
That oh, really?
That he's not going to rescind their reprimand, that he is not going to take the letters out. And what, I mean.
Okay, so, I showed what a big man I was last night by tendering that man an apology. And he calls a meeting today to tell them that he's not as big as me and he can't apologize or won't.
That's exactly what he did, in my opinion.
Okay.
That's exactly what he did. So, now, let me go on. There, we are supporting people's rights, people's First Amendment rights. Doesn't matter if you're in the union. Doesn't matter if you're white, black, green. None of that matters.
Right.
Doesn't even matter if you have a job. We want to protect your rights, and that's what we're doing. Saturday, the Teamsters, which, of course, I'll be there. They're part of us. And there's going to be a rally starting around 9 o'clock in front of the hospital. You don't have to stay all day. You don't have to, you know, if you could drop by for an hour, a couple hours, 20 minutes. If you want to bring your grill and cook some hamburgers and spend a few hours.
That sounds like fun.
You know, we invite you. Now.
9 till when?
Till whenever.
Okay.
You know, and we'd like to see, you know, I mean, anybody, retired people. We had auto workers out there today, retired. We have Bill Bailey from the United Mine Workers who, I don't know how many years ago Bill retired, but he's always been active every day. You know, Bill was there, you know, just, you know, had to drag him away because I know at noon he's got to go take his insulin and, you know.
Yeah.
What time is it, Bill? Oh, quarter after. You know, I said, sometimes I take it late. I said, you know, get out of here.
You're right.
You know, good people. Ed, Mal showed up.
Yeah.
Mal. Another good man. Very good man. Mal, you want to run for one of the, I mean, it seems like everybody's going to abandon their house seats. Supposedly Bob's out. I don't know. I hear Sally Sussman's going to run for the Senate. Now run for something. You know, I'll do everything I can for you.
Right.
These are good people.
Absolutely.
You know, and, the support, you were there for just a little, I don't know how many, you know, an hour or something.
Yeah.
And, the support that you get from the people there. People are mad. People should be mad. You know, it's time for working people to stand up again, and I see that happening. Now, look what they did to the miners at Cannleton.
Yep.
Look at, you know.
It's happening.
A corporation cannot violate a person's rights.
No.
And that's what they're doing, and, well, I urge anybody that could come by Saturday. We'll be out there tomorrow, too, but Saturday's, you know, the big day. Come by.
All right.
You know, bring your beach umbrella. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, that's support other working people.
Sounds
good.
That's
what we have to do.
Wayne, we're up against it. Thanks.
All right, brother.
And thanks
Bye.
For all you do.
Thank you, man.
Later.
Bye.
All right, let's get our top of the hour break and then come back, maybe talk about this a little bit more. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Honey, can you pour me some
water? Yeah, sure.
This year, United Way helped provide over 29,627 prescriptions for the uninsured and gravely ill in Wichita. We called upon 65 pharmacies, 100 social services, and 604 volunteer physicians. Together, we helped over 1,623 patients cope with pneumonia, hepatitis, even cancer. And it doesn't matter.
How do you feel?
The number of pills and programs doesn't really matter. What matters is each new day they make possible.
I feel great.
What matters? United Way.
We
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Through the afternoon, we saw a partly cloudy, upper 50s sort of afternoon. We'll deal with 43 overnight and only a slight chance of showers. Partial cloudiness on Friday as we greet the weekend with a high of 63. Saturday will be dry, mostly sunny, and a bit warmer at 67.
WWNR, Beckley.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You are. I'm Bob. This is hour number two, with plenty of opportunity for you to get your thoughts in. 252-6200 is the local phone number outside Beckley. It's 800-620-9967. Let's back up a minute. A reminder, 9 o'clock Saturday, across from ARH, there will be a rally of people standing up for First Amendment rights. 9 o'clock till whenever. Bring a little grill. You know, they've got those great little grills that just run on the Coleman, little tiny Coleman propane tanks. Those things are great. Bring the beach umbrella, like Wayne said. Have a blast. And do it while supporting the most American of freedoms, the First Amendment. Can you do that? Good. I knew you could. Straight to the phones, Bob. Hey, Bob, you're head on. Yo, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Good deal.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I got your email, and I'm calling you.
Oh, good deal.
So,
Mr. Kohler?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I wanted to make sure. Welcome to the program, first of all.
Thank you.
By way of introducing the audience, this is Robert Kohler. You're an editor with Tribune Media Services?
That's correct, yes.
And a little bit of a firestorm has started around you, hasn't it?
Apparently so, yeah.
Tell us, now, you went to a conference in Nashville about election reform?
That's correct, yes.
And that being that the... That was a kind of a bipartisan effort, wasn't it?
It was bipartisan. The core of it is, you know, progressives, Democrats, but there were Greens, Libertarians, and a few Republicans as well.
Generally people concerned about the status of the franchise in the country, if you will.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound this, make this sound like a cross-examination.
No, go ahead, that's fine.
You penned a column based upon your attendance at this conference, and essentially you asked questions about the electoral process. Now, we've interviewed Brad Friedman on this show.
Okay.
And you know Brad, and Brad
yes,
knows
I do.
You. He's told us a lot about, for instance, the Baker-Carter Commission he talked about, and the greater irregularities surrounding these electronic voting machines.
Yes, right.
You saw those questions and you were disturbed, right?
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah, deeply disturbed. I mean, I've been disturbed since 2000.
Right.
But I haven't written about it until a couple of months ago when I wrote one column that ran in Nashville that just about the time they were organizing the conference, and the organizer, Bernie Ellis, thought, and so he asked me if I wanted to come down and be on the media panel and just talk about the media, and so I was happy to do that
and
happy to learn a lot, deal.
Being with Tribune Media Services, Mr. Kohler, it's safe to say that you're not exactly some sort of wild-eyed conspiracy freak.
I hope it's safe to say that.
Good.
Yeah.
You pen columns. They're syndicated across the country. You're not a one trick pony. You write
right.
about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I have to. I mean, I reach for a mainstream audience. I don't jump onto wild and crazy stuff, but I do try to speak plainly and truthfully and I specialize in writing about things that no one else is writing about.
And, nobody is really writing about these voting machine issues and the general voter irregularities from the 2004 election in the mainstream media.
Not in the mainstream, right.
Is that because there's just no interest, or the issue has been perceived as being some sort of, again, tinfoil hat, black helicopters outside the window, conspiracy theory kind of thing?
Yeah, I think almost anything you can say would fit into, you know, why this silence is there. And I'm really not sure. I mean, to define where I am, I'm still sort of an outsider. I don't work in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. I'm at the Chicago Tribune in their tower, but I don't work in the newsroom. And I'm not subject to the pressures of the newsroom.
Right.
I work as an editor for the Syndicate, and I have to say the Syndicate, which is Tribune Media Services, that they're the ones that syndicate me, have been enormously supportive of me, enormously supportive about what I'm doing, and they're part of the mainstream media, so there is a certain amount of complexity to the media, and it's not all monolithic. I think they're just leave it at that. But
okay.
So there has been some support for me, you know, within the mainstream, and some papers have been running my columns, but not a lot.
Well, then to sort of bring the story forward a little bit, you wrote your column about the voting irregularities. It was largely comprised of questions.
Yes.
Then the public editor for the Tribune, a man named Don Wycliffe, wrote and this didn't even appear in the Chicago Tribune, right?
No. He wrote the only reason he wrote about it is because readers started writing to the Tribune, saying that they should run that column, which was called "The Silent Scream of Numbers."
Right.
And he responded to the phenomenon of all these people writing in. And he read the column and quoted from it, but he completely disagreed with the column, which was fine.
Yeah, I'd say missed the point, but that's...
Well, perhaps so. I mean, I think that there are a lot of flaws in his argument, but this is all the part of the debate. I mean, I love to engage in spirited debate with people.
Right.
And I really don't care whether they. I mean, I like them not to agree, and to challenge my position that makes me be more alert. But he responded to the letters and quoted the column, but the column itself never ran, and that's just gotten people very, very upset.
As well they should be.
Yeah.
Now, to bring it forward, you tried to respond.
Yes, correct.
And for, is it the first time in your career you were spiked?
Well, let me just kind of speak to that a little bit, because I think there's a certain misconception on that. The column wasn't really spiked. It was suggested that the column was appropriate for the Tribune. And for the Tribune newspaper, because that's where the column were... It was, you know, because I was responding to Don Wycliffe's column.
Mm-hmm.
It was necessarily, a familiarity with that column helped understand what I was saying.
I can see that.
And I tried to kind of make the rise above it and make it accessible to, you know, the people without having read the column I was referring to, but it was thought here that it was too much of a personal exchange between me and Don, and they said send it to the Tribune, but give us a different column, you know, to put on the Syndicate wire.
Okay.
So I don't think it was spiked. It was redirected.
Okay.
Yeah.
As you look at the voting irregularities, especially from 2004.
Yeah.
Bob, is there anything that particularly speaks to you more than others, or alarms you more than other things?
Oh, well, boy, that's a tough question, because so much of it does. The electronic stuff and the statistics, you know, the discrepancy of the exit polls. It really helps to really be intelligent about numbers, and I can't say that I am. So, what gripped me and pulled me into the column was what I could understand, which was long lines in the inner city, and basically what looked like, you know, Jim Crow style disenfranchisement of African Americans mostly and other minorities, and then also college students in a lot of areas as well. And just the dirty tricks, and then the phenomenon of a huge amount of undervotes. I mean, people waiting in all these lines and then not casting a vote for president, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they waited 4 hours in line to vote for an alderman.
Exactly, precisely. Yeah, out of the fervor for that local race. And oh, is there a presidential election too?
Well, never mind.
Yeah, it's totally absurd. And so those things are so visceral and they grip me. But when I hear about when I hear and read about what the voting machines, the electronic voting, how easy it is to hack and manipulate, and how there is absolutely zero accountability, and the large scale at which something can happen, results can be altered by a very few people. That's when my blood runs cold.
And again, I don't want people to misunderstand our focus here, Bob.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to change the outcome of the 2004 election.
Mm-hmm.
What's done is done.
Right.
I believe you and I share a common opinion on this. There is enough there to concern us, to make us fear for the validity of the franchise in future elections.
That's precisely it. The attention has to be drawn to 2004 so that 2006 and 2008, there's a chance that they will be verifiable. Those votes will be verifiable. And it's not to change the results. You know, who knows? I mean, basically it's to let the chips fall where they may, but to get enough concern on the issue so that this can't happen again.
And in Mr. Wycliffe's column, he analogized the American electoral process to a ball game.
Right.
Now, that got under my skin just a little bit.
Yes.
I'll be taking my son to his Little League game again here in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And we learned, you know, when you lose, you lose. You walk away, you shake hands, you're done.
Yeah.
And that was the analogy that Mr. Wycliffe gave.
Right.
Somehow I see this as a little bit more serious.
I agree. And it also, it relegates the voters to, well, we're just the sports fans sitting in the stand, in the stands, you know, but we're the participants. And so it's, but I think that the kind of media coverage we've had really my whole lifetime that is so winner focused and horse race focused.
Right.
I mean, the analogy is a sporting event of some sort. And then, you know, and so, everything is irrelevant except who won, and that is so untrue about an election because it's sacred. It's democracy's church. I mean, it's the most sacred thing.
Exactly.
And
well, for instance, I was disheartened in 1988 when George Bush the first. I was disheartened when he beat Michael Dukakis. But you said, well, you know, they won. We'll get them next time.
Exactly.
And that's, again, that's sporting mentality, and it's wrong on my part. But again, I didn't have any doubts.
Yeah.
I didn't. But with 2000, everything changed.
Exactly.
And now, I really wish I wasn't sounding so partisan about this, Bob, but when I look out and I realize that all the voting machine companies are controlled by one side of the political spectrum,
yes,
and that there is not one single company manufacturing voting machines that's owned or controlled by the other side.
Right. And they say that there can't be a paper trail.
There can't be a paper trail, and their code. I mean, we're talking about, you know, simple binary code here for the most part.
Yeah.
And they're saying it's proprietary and that even the governmental agencies that purchase these machines can't verify the accuracy of the code.
Yes.
How in heaven's name, as a rational member of a fairly advanced society, am I supposed to have any kind of confidence in that system?
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable, and I agree with you. And this is, you know, I mean, it has been. I've been feeling, you know, weak and, you know, depressed about this, you know, for the last 4 years, and but sort of daunted, not even knowing how, as a writer and columnist, I could find my way into this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I finally just started doing homework and researching, and you know, and was able to start writing, you know, and wrote a column, and then it just hasn't stopped. As soon as I put my voice out there, it galvanized so many people.
Well, the people, I can well imagine, Bob, you got a whole bunch of thank you, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
And there's an element of this society that feels like, well, you know, we're a television society. There's a lot of people in the society that feels like they can turn on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox,
yeah,
on and on with the alphabet soup, and that they're not going to get anything approaching objective attempts at truth. Because,
exactly.
Because all of these things are owned by monolithic entities that have a vested interest in seeing things come out the way they did.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I mean, keep the reality away from us and give us Michael Jackson, give us Terry Schiavo, give us...
Runaway Bride.
Yeah, the Runaway Bride. Yes, indeed, the Runaway Bride. Whatever the distraction of the moment is, and you know, and when that fades, another one magically appears.
Yeah, we're a nation with ADD.
Yeah, right.
Oh, look, a squirrel. There are people that are paying attention, and they are the ones who really you spoke to.
It's phenomenal that there were. I mean, everybody was right on the edge of, you know, the emotional edge on this. Or so many people were, and so, you know, it was like, you know, my words were like knocking them over with a feather. I mean, and they were waiting for somebody to say this. I mean, the only odd thing is that it's me. From my point of view,
yeah, because this has not been your oeuvre.
I mean, I write about current events.
Sure.
Most of my, you know, I mean, I'm a diehard pacifist. I've been, you know, critiquing the war from the beginning and that sort of thing. And those issues really are more. I mean, war and peace and violence in general are my main cup of tea in terms of a column topics, and so I sort of, you know, crossed a bridge to start writing about the election.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what resonated.
Well, having crossed the bridge, are you going to stay on the other side now? I mean, as far as continuing to pursue the issue?
Yeah, it's not something that I have to vary what I write, so I can't write about this every week.
Right.
But I will stay on top of it for sure. It is so electrical. It is so charged right now.
Are these machines becoming ubiquitous there in Illinois?
You know what? Illinois is a good state. Somebody described it. I was at an event in Oak Park, just outside of Chicago, this past weekend.
Birthplace of Hemingway.
Yes, precisely. And one of the speakers there described Chicago as the capital of blue America. I mean, and that made a lot of sense. We have a great county clerk in David Orr who is very committed to verifiable elections.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're moving to electronic, but they're testing to make sure that that there's paper trail, that everything is verifiable. And, and the state legislature, has passed a law, you know, requiring that Illinois have verifiable, you know, paper trail elections.
Mm-hmm.
So, Illinois, I'm fortunate in that sense that I'm in a state that's more on top of it than others.
But still, we're dealing with what we're dealing with.
I keep
saying that we've had the debate framed out from under us simply because we're not asking the right questions in some instances, and that is. What the heck's wrong with a pencil on a piece of paper?
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yep. I mean, I agree that makes, you know, well, there's no way to do, you know, large scale fraud with that, for one thing. I mean,
it seems like it would be a lot more complicated than it would be if you did it electronically.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Bob, your website is commonwonders.com.
That's correct.
Okay. And your columns can be found there?
Yes, yeah. There's.
Are they archived as well?
They're archived. There's about a year and a half's worth of columns archived there, so quite a good chunk of them.
And in particular, this column, Silent Screen with Numbers. You've also got another one. Is it a follow-up? Democracy's Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, that was the second one, and then the third one is called Citizens in the Rain, and that's also on there.
Well, I encourage people to go by and have a read. Thank you so much for responding to my email so promptly.
I'm here at work. I'm working late. I've taken the day off tomorrow, so I'm working ahead. So.
Well, good deal. And just out of curiosity, do you know if your column's carried in any papers here in the state of West Virginia?
I don't believe it is, no.
Okay, we'll have to rattle a couple of cages and
okay.
See if we can get you picked up.
All right, do that.
Robert Kohler, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome, Bob. It's great to talk to you. It's great to talk to, you know, to a liberal talk show host, and I have more power to you.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
And I love West Virginia.
Oh, have you been here?
It's a beautiful state.
We're proud as punch of it, and we're just trying to keep them from blowing up all our mountains before, so other people can enjoy them.
Right, absolutely.
All right, well, take care, and I hope maybe we can communicate again soon. Thank you very much, Bob. Take care.
Okay, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Now.
Robert Kohler, columnist and editor for Tribune Media Service, calling from Chicago, Illinois, recently became interested in the massive irregularities from the election of 2004, and has polarized a good number of readers because he is the first, really, of the so-called mainstream media to legitimately or give legitimate examination of the voting irregularities that did. And you can't say there weren't irregularities; there were tons of them. And to begin to question why it is that our electoral process, the franchise, if you will, is so suspect. And it is nothing if it is not suspect now. Who knows if your vote was counted in 04? I don't know. Do you? No. Of course, it's not, you know, I'm still a paper ballots kind of guy, but I'm crazy that way. I'm a wild-eyed liberal, you know. Listen, let's take our bottom of the hour break. Come back. Your phone calls are welcome at 252-6200, outside Beckley at 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Where there's a tornado,
or there's a forest fire,
where Mother Nature is at her worst,
where there's a search,
and there's a rescue,
where there are Americans in need,
we are there.
When disaster strikes,
or one volunteer force,
helping each other, and simply doing what needs to be done,
you are the Civil Air Patrol,
the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force.
To join, call 1-800-FLY-2338.
Or log on to the World Wide Web at www.cap.gov.
Hey, look. It's a text message.
What's it say?
Here for you.
Really? Hey, Cellular One wants you to get the message. We're here for you. That's right. Cellular One is here for you in Beckley, Pineville, Bluefield, Welsh, Lewisburg, White Sulphur Springs, Oak Hill, and more places in West Virginia and the country than ever before. The company that Beckley Register Herald readers voted favorite place to buy cellular phones is here for you with loads of anytime minutes, including unlimited nights and weekends. Plus, Cellular One's here with flip phones, camera phones, even free phones. But most importantly, Cellular One is here with dependable local customer service. Really? So get a phone, get a plan, and get it now. From Cellular One, West Virginia's only locally owned and operated wireless provider. We're here for you. Bring your home or wireless number to Cellular One and get free activation and a free phone. Visit your neighborhood Cellular One store for more information.
What is the most influential time in a child's life? Age 6? 8? 12? Actually, it's between 3 and 8. Every afternoon. I'm Denzel Washington, and I'm asking you to make sure every child has a safe place to go after school. Call 1-800-854-CLUB. Support the Boys and Girls Clubs, the positive place for kids.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Governor Manchin says it would have been easy for him to veto two controversial bills, but instead he decided to sign them, but make some changes later. The governor was up till midnight deadline last night, deciding whether to sign the judicial pay raise bill and the measure that doubles the monthly 911 fee for cell phone owners. He said he signed the pay raise bill after considering where the salaries for West Virginia judges rank with surrounding states. He says if the state is to move forward, it must retain and recruit qualified judges. But the governor has promised to make two changes in connection with the legislation.
We will correct this pension system that the judicial system has now, which is much too lucrative, and it must be brought in line with what we can afford to pay for, so that we don't go upside down again. And the other thing I was not in favor of is when they put the Board of Public Works and myself, the governor, I said, we should be evaluated the same as all public employees this fall, which we will do.
The governor also signed the 911 bill, which doubles the emergency fees on cell phones to $3. It also increases the share collected by all but four counties, Berkeley, Cabell, Kanawha, and Mercer. The governor says he signed the bill because of public safety concerns. Lincoln County Circuit Clerk Greg Stowers has been accused of participating in a conspiracy to buy votes in elections that go back clear to 1990. Stowers was one of five people named in a 12-count superseding indictment handed down Tuesday by a federal grand jury in Beckley. The indictment was unsealed today. The commander at Fort Hood, Texas, has some decisions to make in the Lindy England case. Yesterday, a military judge tossed out the Army private's guilty plea to charges of abusing Iraqi prisoners. The trial was abruptly ended during testimony by reputed abuse ringleader Charles Grainer, who the judge said contradicted England's previous testimony. Fayette County Prosecutor's Office has been removed from the investigation of that fatal shooting at a Fayetteville funeral home last week. Circuit Judge Charles Vickers has ruled that Prosecutor Paul Blake's association with the funeral home's co-owner would create an appearance of partiality had he stayed on the case. That's the news. Now the forecast for the rest of this evening. Partly cloudy with temperatures mid-50s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low 42. Partly cloudy tomorrow, low 60s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low near 42. Saturday, sunny, upper 60s. And then for Mother's Day, sunny with a high near 78. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You think you're the only one having a rough time in today's economy, bucko? It's time you started thinking about someone else, such as the rich. Yeah, the rich. Too few Americans give any thought to the hardships of those at the top. Consider something as basic as the sheer physical burden of carrying all that moolah around, the back-breaking weight of their wallets and purses, for example. And it probably never occurs to you that those big diamond earrings and gold necklaces can pull you down by the end of the day. Yeah, yeah, we hear you working stiffs whining all the time about how your paychecks aren't even keeping up with inflation, but stop for a moment and think about the opposite problem. CEOs, for example, already weighted down with personal wealth, have just had another load dumped on them. The pay of the top corporate executives rose by 12.6% last year, averaging nearly $10 million each. And that does not include their stock payments, which can easily double the weight of their total sack. Look at the burden of E. Stanley O'Neill, the big dog at Merrill Lynch. In addition to his salary and bonus, he was given $31 million worth of corporate stock payments. Come on, that's piling on the poor guy. Or Richard Kovacevich at Wells Fargo, who not only had to shoulder a $7.5 million bonus, but also stock payments of $20 million. Imagine having to haul that home. It would be next to impossible for these guys to bear up under such a load, except that, luckily, they're given chauffeured limousines to carry it away. There are also the golf club memberships, the corporate retreat in the South Pacific, the daily rubdown by the executive suite masseuse, and other free perks to help make the burden tolerable. It's a mighty hard row to hoe, but someone has to do it. This is Jim Hightower saying, so when you see the elites floating away in their yachts while you're barely treading water, before you get angry, take a moment to feel their pain.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the magnet.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
WWNR Beckley.
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Bob Kohler, Tribune Media Services, author of Silent Scream of Numbers, Democracy's Abu Ghraib, Citizens Standing in the Rain, CommonWonders.com. You can read his columns. And they are, I went back and reread Silent Scream of Numbers, and it's mild. It's not, but of course, again, you know, when the other side gets involved with this, it turns into a screaming fest, because that's all they know how to do. This is the other side wants to blow away judges but attacks Randy Rhodes for a radio skit. The other side screams conspiracy theory when all we ask is why in Gehenna, Ohio, where there were 600 and some registered voters, why George Bush on the electronic voting machines got 4,000 votes. That's all we're asking. Why did people go to the vote and stand in the rain, stand in the snow, stand in the cold for hours on end to go into a precinct and vote for alderman and dog catcher, but Carrier Bush, can't be bothered. Why did that happen on these electronic machines? Why did that happen? And deep in the still and dark of the night and the deep little places in your soul, you know the answer to why that happened. Diebold's CEO and the letter he wrote promising to deliver Ohio for George W. Bush in 2004, he came through on his promise, didn't he, sunshine? Time after time after time after time, exit polling has been rock solid. The Bush administration used exit polling in the Ukraine to point to the fact that Viktor Yushchenko should be declared the winner. Exit polling based on hardcore mathematical statistical evidence is reliable in the Ukraine, but the laws of mathematics somehow don't apply in Ohio. And thanks to that, we've got a guy whose wife stands up and makes gay jokes about him now. Of course, the guy kisses Arabs and holds their hands and makes jokes about going to Splash Day in Galveston. A bunch of buff, tan Texans running around in little Speedos and not a woman to be found. Again, I am a liberal. I don't, the sexuality thing, don't care. If, on the other hand, you're like Jim West and you're trolling for little children in chat rooms, calling yourself Cobra 82nd, what is it with these gay, closeted Republicans and the military references? You know, Jimmy Jeff Gannyguck, hotmilitarystud.com. Ugh. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they do. But I do care when you're a hypocrite about it. I do care when you're of one persuasion and you use political power to oppress other people of that self-same persuasion. Do you see the distinction? So yeah, look at everything we got from Kent Blackwell, Secretary of State of Ohio, and concomitantly George Bush's statewide campaign chief. Could we have a new rule? Could we have a new rule here? You know, a new rule that says if you're in charge of counting votes in a particular state, you can't be some candidate's campaign chairman. That Bobby's going all liberal on us again. Let's go to the phones. David's with us. Hey, David, you're head on. David.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Doing well. Sounds like we're talking about lack of honesty, cynicism, duplicity.
Mendacity?
Talking out of both sides of any part of the body you want to point to. Well, I want to have a little historical nail here to hang a collar. Hang a hat on.
Okay.
I called in about union busting, and it's assorted brothers and sisters and evil offspring.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, the face, the absolute face, the poster person for modern union busting is Ronald Bonzo Reagan.
How could it be any other?
He busted up union after union, starting with air traffic controllers, making it less safe to get on an airplane. He was proud of it. That Republican gave way to George Herbert Hoover Bush. And then we took back our lives and our country for a while, and now then we've been stuck with W. The mandate king. So now then, we've got this little historical fact that Republicans are union busters, worker haters, and absolutely disinterested in anybody rising above the rank of serf economically. I think that's a given. I think there's plenty of evidence. Last night, I heard a caller reference with great pride and some indignance that he was willing to blow his horn in support of those nurses that are taking it blow after blow on top of their head, in their pocketbook, and just being beaten into submission, both by work rules, lack thereof, and an onerous contract by which they got that job. And then he was outraged. He was amazed that a caller couldn't believe, said that you couldn't tie being a Bush voter, you couldn't tie that automatically to hating workers, as I recall.
And so far, so good.
That is one of the clearest examples of ultimate, consummate hypocrisy I have ever heard in my life. To stand around with a telephone in your hand and say you have voted for the architect of doom for the working person, and then, by patting the doomed worker on the head, you're supporting them? I'm sorry, Bob. In my book, that's the moral equivalent of the German that voted for Adolf Hitler and then reminded Jews being hauled off to the camps, have a nice trip, be sure and wear your sweater, I hear it's cold in Poland. The moral equivalent.
We support your religious rights. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, I was so caught up in listening to myself, I didn't even hear you.
No, I support your right to be a Jew.
Right. Be sure and send us a postcard when you're settled.
I bite my fry.
Honey, where's that National Socialist yard sign? We got an election coming up.
Yeah.
Brother. When are they ever going to make the connection that to vote for that evil little ferret-faced chimp of a president we've got right now, you are absolutely screwing every worker that wants to rise above minimum wage?
Somehow, it's a calculation that I don't have a problem making.
Well, good. It's not just me.
I can get two and two to be four. You know, you vote for somebody who despises working people. Therefore, there is a moral and logical connection between that act and despising working people. And again,
the dots connect very easily.
Well, sure.
You don't erase the line by tooting your horn and waving as you go by.
There's so much truth in that, David. And the thing is, it's I don't know if you heard Bob Kohler in the other half hour. The way he decried the fact that we tend to look at our electoral process as some sort of horse race or ball game where we're merely the spectators, and oh dang it, we lost. Maybe next, get them next time. there's a little bit more to it than that, because when you vote for that guy, you're voting for his policies, his principles, and the things he has done and wants to do.
And you're voting for every person of his ilk that he wants to drag in, put on a bench, appoint, push another good person out the door because they're not a member of his party. I'm sorry, a sporting analogy. You're not a good baseball fan if you only watch the World Series. If your only participation is to vote every couple of years, you're not in politics the way an American citizen ought to be in politics. If all you know is what anybody's political commercials say within 60 days of an election, you're a sad example of a Jeffersonian American.
Well, you're no example of a Jeffersonian American. And let's draw one more analogy, David. This one might even go home. If you only show up at church on Christmas and Easter, you're not much of a Christian.
Nope, because you're going to get a chance to live your Christianity every single day, or you're not going to live it. And dropping by church once or twice a year is not going to get the job done. You're going to have to do it when people that don't like what you're doing are watching. When you have to stand up for something that in your estimation fits what Jesus would have done, and most of what I see in the name of Christianity and right-wing media and our president is not, I don't believe, what Jesus would have done or would do.
Right.
Well, you got to stand up.
And be counted.
Yeah. And be counted.
Yeah,
and I want to echo what a very wise man said last night, and then I'll get out of the way so possibly another caller can yell and scream.
Or maybe just me.
The greatest way to have a great union is a very bad company. I think that hospital in your neck of the woods is headed toward having a fine union one of these days.
It's looking more and more like it. I don't know if you heard it or not. Now, I prided myself, David, on the fact that I came out last night. That boss man felt like he'd been offended, and I apologized because I'm that classy. Now, I applaud you
for giving that possibility an airing, and if there was any substance to it from his side, you apologized. I'm sorry. I did not get to hear that. I streamed in after you had done that. But I am sure it was heartfelt, honest, and well done. So I congratulate you for being big enough. And you'll pick on Democrats if you need to.
Sure I will. But I was also trying to lead by example. It's, you know, there's a Southern phrase, David. I'm sure you're well familiar with it. Raised right. He was raised right. You were
exactly.
Raised right. I was raised right. And as a function of being raised right, I can lead by example, and so that I did. That man felt offended, and so I tendered an apology, trying to lead by an example. We were hoping today that maybe, perhaps, he too might follow that Christian example and apologize. Of course, he did not. He called those nurses in and told them specifically, you will get no apology, the reprimand will stay in your file. And you, so much for trying to lead by example.
I think it's time for some nurses to pass an envelope, find a labor lawyer, and see what's left of the Labor Relations Board in your state.
There's grievances pending. There are grievances pending. So
I congratulate them for exploring their options.
Well,
yes, that is spoken as a previous shop steward, as I earned the money to work my way through college in a union manufacturing facility. So I have been a worker inside and outside of unions. I have been a shop steward, and I've been a supervisor in that same union plant. I am happy to say I have some perspective on that. That got me through, gets me through life. And so it's not out of ignorance, and it's not out of sitting at home and watching TV or listening to Rush Limbaugh. And I congratulate those women for having what it takes to explore some options and just see what it would take to have a fair shake out of the company.
Well, we're going to be standing with them. I wish you could be here. Going to be a Jim Dandy little rally on Saturday, 9 o'clock across from the hospital, 9 o'clock till whenever. I'm going to be there. And we're just going to sit there and revel in the sweet sunshine of the First Amendment.
Carry a big old sign and wave and say howdy.
Exactly.
Well, Bob, you have a great evening, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak now and then. And you're doing a wonderful job of work.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David. You take care now. Bye.
Yeah.
And Jeff, hey Jeff, you're head on.
What's up now?
How you are?
Just listening around here a little bit. Are you going to apologize for giving out the misinformation about Bush and the VA funding?
What are you talking about?
About you talk about how much he's cut it all the time.
No, there's no need for an apology there. In fact, I saw a result of a vote, an April vote, where it was strictly along party lines. Your Republican Party voted to, in essence, refuse an extension of health care benefits for returning Iraqi vets. Meanwhile, today...
Well, they don't get lifetime.
Meanwhile, today, Congressman Ray Hall and a number of other good Democrats introduced the new GI Bill of Rights for 2005. It will not pass in the Republican Congress because they don't give a tinker's damn about the troops.
Under Bill Clinton, VA funding was increased 31% in his 8 years. Under the first 4 years of George Bush, it was increased 37%.
Where are you reading from, Jeff?
I'm not reading. I'm going from memory. I know what he done.
Okay, sounds like you're reading again.
I can tell you where it's at.
Well, the point here is, if he raised it 37% and the need is for 52, it's still inadequate. We have troops coming home who need services that they cannot get. We have wounded troops coming home who are in 6-month waiting lines to receive services for their injuries. Now, are you telling me that the VA is adequately funded?
I'm not sure, but I know it wasn't cut.
Okay, you know it wasn't cut. So you know better than the veterans of foreign wars who pay people to go through these numbers and look after veterans who say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that these things were cut. Now,
the Veterans of Foreign Wars is a lobbying group. They lobby for more money.
Okay,
just like AARP.
Okay, just another one of those no good lobbying groups representing ordinary Americans.
They're lobbying to get more money. They're never going to say, we've got enough money, take some of it back. They're always going to want more.
But they're not getting the money, Jeff. The Veterans Administration is getting the money. We're not talking about somebody who's... We're not talking about Halliburton here who gets the money. We're talking about a group that is speaking up for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel equal disdain for the American Legion?
No, I don't have any disdain for any of those people.
Because
Because
they, too, pointed out the fact that Bush was... that he was pulling the rug out from under the Veterans Administration.
He's increasing their funding.
Now,
he's not pulling the rug out from anybody.
Okay, right. And,
you go to the United
and we,
States
and we,
budget.
And we,
the
really, and we really didn't attack Iraq. And Saddam flew his planes into the buildings on 9/11. And more fantasy.
Go to the you can Google up United States budget, and it's in there. It's in there every year in millions of dollars. It goes from 59,934 in 03 to 60,296 to 04, 65,285 in 2005. It goes up every single year. Every single year it goes up.
And so does the need, Jeff.
So don't say he cut it, Bob.
So does the need.
You know, and everybody harps on he cut education funding. His education funding is going straight up.
Oh, okay. So that was just a big lie about the Pell Grants.
Go to factcheck.com.
Yeah, okay.
And look at it. His domestic spending, take away Homeland Security and the War on Terror, his domestic spending has gone up 30% over Clinton. So don't, where are all these cuts I'm always hearing about? Every time anybody tries to cut anything, we hear a big old scream and a holler.
Okay, so Tom DeLay didn't demand $15 billion in cuts to Medicaid.
Yeah, that has been cut, but the way the federal
Well, there's one of those cuts you're always hearing about, Jeff.
The West Virginia, I can't speak for all the rest of the states, but West Virginia's cut, all they have to come up with is $38 million, and it'll be fully funded as it was. Now, you know, if I give you a dollar, if you give me a dollar and I give you $4, does that sound like a good deal?
Are you talking about matching funds?
Sure. If you give me $38 million and I give you $159 million, is that a good deal for you or me?
Well, it depends on what you were getting the year before and the year before that, doesn't it?
Well, you know, just the funding is going, the Medicaid money is not
is getting
going
cut.
As far.
Is
it was.
Getting cut.
And they're asking for states
money,
to come up with a little bit more.
The Medicaid money is getting cut by $15 billion at the behest of Tom DeLay.
You know, and it's not all Republicans. It's the Democrats in Charleston that gave away $40 million a year. That's enough to make up for the workers' comp money.
Oh, so they gave it away. It was
they gave it to the companies. They didn't get that workers' comp bill that Joe Manchin rammed down our throats. That wasn't a corporate giveaway.
Oh, hell yes, it was.
Well, thank you.
That
was enough to make up for
giveaway.
The Medicaid money. He just gave it away.
Hey, you know what could have made up for some of the Medicaid money? The little tax giveaway that we gave to insurance companies so they could give us a rebate on our income auto insurance premiums.
Joe signed a couple clunkers today.
Oh yeah, there's some more money we could make up for Medicaid, Jeff.
I can't understand how a governor can say, well, you know, this judicial pay raise is no good and it's entirely too much and the bill's flawed, but I'm going to sign it anyway. And the cell phone bill, you know, that raise is too much and I see a couple flaws in the bill, but I'm going to sign it anyway. That's what he said. He said both the bills were too much and flawed.
Hey, Jeff, check this out. Do you suppose that somewhere along the way somebody might file a legal challenge to the destruction of your constitutional right to sue an insurance company? You think somebody might sue over that?
I don't know.
I mean,
what
just
do you
guess.
Think?
No, just guess. I'm guessing yes. Okay, I'm guessing yes. Now, what's the average pay raise for a circuit judge?
$26,000.
Now, Joe Manchin just signed you a sweetheart $26,000 pay raise. When somebody sues over his precious little tort reform bill, aren't you just going to feel a little bit more kindly disposed toward that tort reform bill with 26 large warm in your wallet? Hell yes, you are.
Well, I spoke out against it. I helped you guys and Mel, and I talked hard as I could for it. You remember, you know that, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And I also know we're out of time, Jeff.
He said something about the judges were 48th pay in the nation. I don't see any problem with that considering our state is 50th.
Well,
I think they're doing pretty good.
What were they making before they got the 26 large?
I think 90 grand.
For 90 grand, I can put people in the pokey.
You know,
I can sit around in a black robe and say, you go for 5 years, you go for 2 years, you go for 13 years. And they've got a pension that just won't quit.
I threw this out real quick to Steve the other day, and he said he thought it was a good idea. I think that government employees' raise should rise with the median income of the state. That way, if they raise all of our incomes, then they can get a raise. That way, they'll be a little more inclined to get us out of 50th place.
Or a little more inclined to argue for better pay for maybe private sector workers. We got to go, Jeff.
All right, man, thanks.
Later. All right, coming back out of the news, more of your calls. This is News Talk 620 WWNR, Beckley, West Virginia. This is Head On. Me? I'm Bob from Kate.
Honey, can you pour me some
water? Yeah, sure.
This year, United Way helped provide over 29,627 prescriptions for the uninsured and gravely ill in Wichita. We called upon 65 pharmacies, 100 social services, and 604 volunteer physicians. Together, we helped over 1,623 patients cope with pneumonia, hepatitis, even cancer. And it doesn't matter.
How do you feel?
The number of pills and programs doesn't really matter. What matters is each new day they make possible.
I feel great.
What matters? United Way. Thank you.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Through the afternoon, we saw a partly cloudy, upper 50s sort of afternoon. We'll be only 43 overnight and only a slight chance of showers. Partial cloudiness on Friday as we greet the weekend with a high of 63. Saturday will be dry, mostly sunny, and a bit warmer at 67.
WWNR, Beckley.
Welcome back. This is Head On. It's Thursday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, you know, when you go looking at federal budgets and things, you can't just look at that top number. You got to look where the stuff is going. And some of it's the real swimming, make your eyeballs float, roll back in your head kind of mind-numbing stuff. And that's why there are experts at places like the Veterans of Foreign Wars to analyze it and to come out and tell us when travesties are being done. Now, while everything else is getting cut, remember, the defense budget of the United States equals, 50% of all defense spending in the world now. Who are we so mad at that we get? Never mind. Let's go to the phones. Ben Birch is with us. Hey, Ben, you're Head On. How you doing, Ben? Ben.
Hey there. How you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
Kind of having an Illinois night.
Yeah,
we had Bob Kohler, now you.
You know, I've been trying to explain this something to Jeff on the message board about VA funding, and that is, I'll try to say it in smaller words this time. Maybe he'll get it.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how much money is being pumped into one end of the pipe. If when the guy turns the tap and he gets three drops out rather than the stream of water he needs, there's a bad problem with the water system.
Right.
And that is what is going on with the VA. No matter how much money is being pumped in at the top, the actual benefits per person needing help, and remember, these are people, many of them, who gave life, you know, nearly gave their lives and certainly gave limb and sanity for their country at one point in time.
Sure.
The benefits to each one of them is declining on an annual basis. So you know, how can you not say that benefits to veterans have been cut? The input at the top end of the system has nothing to do with the benefits that the veteran gets.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, Ben. And perhaps another way of analyzing it or expressing it would be to say, if you are buying shower caps for returning veterans, but returning veterans need rehabilitation machines, and you've increased the spending for shower caps 20,000%, you're still at a net loss for the rehab machines.
Well, right, and there's an additional factor you have to bring in here, and this is something that the conservatives don't want us to talk about, but there is an incredible demand on the VA system just in the last 20 months, and that is the returning veterans who are coming back maimed. And I mean, in this war, because of things like the clotting patches, you know, the clotting patch they can use to stop arterial bleeding
right
in the field without stitches, you know, I mean, amazing junk like that, people are surviving now that were maimed beyond recognition.
Right.
And they're coming home, and they are being separated from service immediately upon hitting the states, and they are suddenly the VA's problem.
Exactly.
And
in the case of guardsmen, Ben, when they come home, you know, the insurance that they had when they left for Georgia's war, when they left their private sector job, that's not there for them anymore.
No.
They can't get back on.
No, there are people who have come home, you know, come home legless, and you know it, and the body armor only covers the torso, it covers the groin, it covers the back and the spine, and you know, and the helmet covers the head, but nothing covers your face or your arms or your legs, and so these people are coming back without these things.
Yeah,
and sometimes pretty much without any of those things.
What was the number from a month or so ago? 60% of wounded veterans returning are suffering from traumatic brain injury, TBI.
Because we can resuscitate them after they've been without enough blood pressure.
And
we can bring them back after they've been so far gone now.
Yeah, and that's everything from a concussion to the status of like this fireman who woke up over the weekend after 10 or 15 years, and it's the entire range in between of that. And the traumatic brain injury fund through the CDC funding in the Bush budget, there's no way getting around it, is cut to zero.
Well, all I can say is, when the crimes that we know of have finally been brought to the light of day and everyone finally sees them for what they are, I don't think there's a place on this planet they're going to be able to hide from us.
I don't either, Ben. And speaking of when the crimes that have been, now you follow the media pretty closely.
Mm-hmm.
ABC, CBS, NBC, any of the alphabet supers. How much coverage have you seen of this story that came out last week about the leak of the secret war plan in Britain? You know, the one that said what was the quote? That it was an eyes only. It was a report to Tony Blair after.
I've not heard a peep.
Yeah, not a peep. Nope. And this is the one that said that the evidence was being fixed. And this is March of this is 2002. The evidence was being fixed to set up the war with Saddam.
Right.
Not a peep.
Yeah, but when we were saying the same thing at that time, we were told we were conspiracy theorists.
Oh, the communists, un-Americans, anarchists.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyhow, my friend, you take care.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate your help. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Seriously, this story, and you haven't seen it, what was it? It was buried probably in the fashion section of the New York Times. Secret document from the heart of government, and I have deliberately sat on this story for days, sort of keeping an eye on TV news. Hear the crickets? Not a word. Secret document from the heart of the British government reveals that Tony Blair privately committed Britain to war with Iraq and then set out to lure Saddam Hussein into providing the legal justification. The Downing Street Minutes, headed secret and strictly personal, UK eyes only, detail one of the most important meetings ahead of the invasion. It was chaired by Tony Blair, attended by his inner circle. It took place after a meeting with Boy George, and Blair-backed regime change by force from the outset, even though his own Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith, warned him that such action could be illegal. Now, those minutes start out with these words. This record is extremely sensitive. No further copy should be made. The paper should be shown only to those with a genuine need to know. And this is a meeting from July 2002 attended by military and intelligence chiefs where Tony Blair laid out his desire to have war with Iraq without any need whatsoever for it. Here's the quote. If the political context were right, people would support regime change, said Blair. He added that the key issues were whether the military plan worked and whether we had the political strategy to give the military plan space to work. If the political context were right, people would support regime change. Political context. And then Jack Straw said the case for war was thin as Saddam was not threatening his neighbors and his WMD capability was less than that of Libya, North Korea, or Iran. They knew it. They knew it. We knew it. This happened after a meeting with George Bush. Oh, my God. Have a look. Where in the U.S. media is the discussion of this? We told you. We who don't believe in unnecessary war. We tried to tell you freaks that you were engaging and embarking upon murder by supporting that monster in the White House. We told you. And, well, you said we weren't American enough. And you sent 1,500 members of the Flower of American Youth to their graves on lies. The British government sits here and admits that they were going to cook up a reason for war or die trying. They wanted the war. What kind of sick government, British or American, wants a war? Yearns for it, keens for it, aches for it like a 5-year-old on December 24th waiting for Christmas. What kind of monster thinks that way? So now, there's a little bit of unrest in England, in the UK, and parents of slaughtered Englishmen, parents of slaughtered Scotsmen, widows of the Iraq War, guess what they're doing? They're going to sue the British government. This from yesterday. Bitter recriminations over Iraq continue to dog Tony Blair as relatives of British soldiers killed in the conflict take the first steps toward legal action against him. A letter from 10 bereaved families was delivered to Downing Street yesterday, stating that there would be an immediate application for a judicial review. A judicial review, unless the Prime Minister agrees to a public inquiry within 14 days. The accusations of dishonesty over Iraq in the last days of the campaign see the Prime Minister forced yet again to justify joining the U.S.-led invasion, this time during a visit to the key marginal seat of Gloucester. Relatives of dead soldiers scathingly attacked Mr. Blair for his lies about the war at a press conference held just 50 yards from the Ministry of Defense. The families also claimed that a soldier's wife had been told by an insurance company that her husband was no longer covered while serving in Iraq because it thought the war could be illegal. You see, in life insurance policies, there are neat little clauses like that. No coverage in cases of illegal war. Oh, Lord, don't you see how it works? Don't you see how it works? Now, Peter Brierly lost his son, Sean, and he said, "My son went to war thinking it was going to make the world safe from weapons of mass destruction. I believe that argument made by the Prime Minister as well." He was a believer. He was one of the sheep. As time went by, it was proved that they did not have the WMDs, and I began to think about the legal implications. Now I know that Tony Blair lied. He sent my son to his death needlessly. Mr. Blair was right about three letters, but it wasn't WMD. It was OIL. Now, Tony Blair's facing an election. Next day or so, maybe. But George Bush said, "I got me a mandate. Ain't going to answer no more questions about my war." You sent 1,500 people plus. And those are just the Americans. To their death, you Bush voters, you monsters, you bloodthirsty killers. Both before and after the July meeting, Blair insisted in public no decision had been made. Well, we had that here too, didn't we? Mr. Bush, are we going to war?
I haven't made a decision about that.
When the decision was not only made, the plans were laid, the orders were issued, and everybody knew what was going to go down and when.
He's got moral values.
Jesus. I can't understand the Republican mindset that loves war more than peace and death more than life, and then at the same time gets all hypocritical and hops up and down on one leg talking about women choosing abortion. Then again, this is the party of Spokane Mayor Jim West, who cruises chat rooms for little boys that he can do sexy things too. You're a heck of a bunch, you Republicans are. Let's take a quick break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Channel.
Any of you guys out there looking for the girl next door? Because I know where you can find her. Cupid.com. It's a place to meet women that live close by. Cupid.com isn't interested in compiling some big worldwide network. They're focused on putting you in touch with the cuties you pass on your way to work. People who share your same area code. Basic Cupid memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even apply to messages from gold members, a service you usually pay for on other sites. You can remain anonymous and still put Cupid's auto-match to work, locating women with your favorite traits and qualities. Bigger online dating sites show you a universe of women, which is perfect if you're into long-distance relationships. But Cupid.com shrinks that world to women right in your backyard, because the girl next door never lives three states away. Find your true love at Cupid.com, either online or at one of our fun local events.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
Honey, can you pour me some water?
Yeah, sure.
This year, United Way helped provide over 29,627 prescriptions for the uninsured and gravely ill in Wichita. And it doesn't matter. We called upon 65 pharmacies, 100 social services, and 604 volunteer physicians. And it doesn't matter. Together, we helped over 1,623 patients cope with pneumonia, hepatitis, even cancer. And it still doesn't matter. The number of pills and programs doesn't really matter. What matters is each new day they make possible.
How do you feel?
I feel great.
Your United Way investment, magnified by others who invest the United Way, has the real power to bring about the results that matter where you live. What matters? United Way.
Back to radio for the rest of us.
Head on. Welcome back. And to the phones, David is back with us with another thought. Hey, David, your head on. David.
Oh, yes, Bob.
Yes.
Well, you know, I've heard all this quibbling about this VA funding, and I want to turn this whole thing on its head, and maybe crack the head wide open. We've got soldiers, men and women, coming home with wounds never experienced by medical teams before. You've talked about it. They're a different sort of wound. The shattered limb that used to let a soldier bleed to death deliriously on the battlefield, that can be stopped, but he comes back effectively a cripple, or she.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful picture circulating right now of a very attractive young woman, red hair, bright eyes, and she has in one of her hands, at the end of her extended arm, a harness showing the prosthesis that goes on the other side where she has no arm. And she's sitting there looking calm and serene in an olive drab T-shirt. There is so much of that. But getting back to this VA funding and whether it should be this number, that number, I want to go at this from a completely different direction.
Please do.
For soldiers that have offered their lives and it wasn't their time and they came home needing medical treatment, how in the name of God can you offer them too much money? How could you not just shower them with treatment?
Who
cares about a stinking percentage? And I would love to use a bigger word.
Yep.
You cannot spend too much money on people that have gone in service to this country to let some nitwit jump a curb at McDonald's driving an SUV and complain about $3 gasoline I am steamed.
You doggone tax and spend liberals trying to give away all the corporations' money. What do you think these veterans are, David? Human?
Yes. Yeah. Sort of, kind of, and yes. I want to have a tremendous impact on corporations. Rather than a multiplier of 301 for some stinking CEO, I'd like to drop it down to about 280.
Yeah.
Gee, commies. Yeah, that's me. Marxist. Throw that one in there.
Marxist, Leninist, Maoist, member of the Shining Path, because you want to take care of veterans.
You say that like it's a bad thing. And your point?
I know. Lord God. You know, yeah, by...
How could you spend too much money on those people?
Right, and if funding is adequate, If funding is adequate, why is there a six-month waiting list to get your new leg?
Precisely.
Why don't we have warehouses full of legs? Why didn't Don Rumfield, when he was talking about his known gnomes and his unknown gnomes and his garden gnomes, why didn't he understand that this is medical miracles, David? These people don't die anymore. They just come back shattered, and they can't go back to their jobs, and they can't earn $75,000 a year again.
Ever.
And there are
men and women that were making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. There may not be 100,000 of them, but there are enough to be significant. They're coming home, less an arm, less a leg. And I had a brief association with the military, and I lived through the secondhand experience of my best friend through high school and college, coming back light three fingers, a lot of skin, his good looks, and a hell of a lot of his happy attitude in Vietnam. I have watched servicemen be treated wonderfully, the best that could be offered when they got home. Without what happened for him and Walter Reed, the man would have never gone beyond being just an idiot with a bad right arm. But he's a totally productive citizen with a huge life that goes on now. And if we aren't doing the same for all those that come home now, that was done for him and those that I saw in Walter Reed twice when I flew to visit him there, we are doing the greatest disservice, but yet we've got lying recruiters acting like they're selling a caddy on the corner.
Oh, my God, I've got that story here, David.
They are sucking those kids in. Don't worry about a thing. You get $10,000 right now. And they turn to their recruiting partner, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Maybe his mom will get to spend the rest of it, but he may not.
Yeah, and then they...
And don't ask for everything, son, because if you don't know that it's supposed to be in the contract, I don't have to give it to you. And I can win a toaster by screwing you out of some of these benefits.
It's the truth. I mean, young Jesse Fulmer, my producer, is sitting over here, and he just chuckled when you mentioned the toaster. It's the truth. It is the truth. I've got... I'm still fishing for the story, David. But yeah, here it is. It's beautiful stuff. A high school senior ran a sting on the Army. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he was the editor of his high school newspaper, and he sort of put on some raggedy clothes and marched down to the recruiting center and said, "I dropped out of high school, but I sure would like to get in the Army." And the recruiter said, "Son, don't worry about not finishing high school. You can get on the computer and make up a diploma. You can say it's from Franklin Baptist High School, and we'll take it." And he said,
"No."
And then he said, "Well, I smoked a lot of marijuana. Is that going to be a problem?" And he said, "Son, come with me." And he takes him down to the local head shop. And he buys him a detox kit, and he says, "Lay off the stuff for a couple of days, boy. Drink this stuff, pee a lot, and come back, and you'll be in the Army."
Oh, my Lord, it's as bad as I thought. I couldn't have made that one up. If I'd have been writing a skit, I wouldn't have
done that. I'll do the story maybe after the bottom of the hour break. This is amazing stuff. I'm not kidding. And I mean, this kid should have an automatic full tilt boogie scholarship to either the University of Missouri School of Journalism, Columbia School of Journalism. I don't know. Let him go to the Draw Spunky Art School if he wants to. But somebody needs to give this kid some sort of an award for showing up these miserable stinking frauds for who they are. "Oh, son, just make up your diploma on your Photoshop there, and Uncle Sam will be happy to take it."
If I had enough spare change rattling around one of my coffee cans, I would rather give that kid $5,000 for the next 4 years than give $20,000 to the Democratic Party, because he did more, and he's living a life that matters.
That kid will change. That kid will change his world.
Well, there's more like him. I'm sorry. I still have an affinity for punk rock and the DIY. My God. He did it himself and did it extremely well.
David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Later. And bottom of the hour break time. When we come back, more of your calls to 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. You know, I can yammer on at length, and I'm pretty good at it. But I'd just as soon talk to you. Yeah, you pick. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Governor Manchin says it would have been easy for him to veto two controversial bills, but instead he decided to sign them, but make some changes later. The governor was up to a midnight deadline last night, deciding whether to sign the judicial pay raise bill and the measure that doubles the monthly 911 fee for cell phone owners. He said he signed the pay raise bill after considering where the salaries for West Virginia judges rank with surrounding states. He says if the state is to move forward, it must retain and recruit qualified judges. But the governor has promised to make two changes in connection with the legislation.
We will correct this pension system that the judicial system has now, which is much too lucrative, and it must be brought in line with what we can afford to pay for, so that we don't go upside down again. And the other thing I was not in favor of is when they put the Board of Public Works and myself, the governor, I said, we should be evaluated the same as all public employees this fall, which we will do.
The governor also signed the 911 bill, which doubles the emergency fees on cell phones to $3. It also increases the share collected by all but four counties, Berkeley, Cabell, Kanawha, and Mercer. The governor says he signed the bill because of public safety concerns. Lincoln County Circuit Clerk Greg Stowers has been accused of participating in a conspiracy to buy votes in elections that go back clear to 1990. Stowers was one of five people named in a 12-count superseding indictment handed down Tuesday by a federal grand jury in Beckley. The indictment was unsealed today. The commander at Fort Hood, Texas, has some decisions to make in the Lindy England case. Yesterday, a military judge tossed out the Army private's guilty plea to charges of abusing Iraqi prisoners. The trial was abruptly ended during testimony by reputed abuse ringleader Charles Grainer, who the judge said contradicted England's previous testimony. Fayette County Prosecutor's Office has been removed from the investigation of that fatal shooting at a Fayetteville funeral home last week. Circuit Judge Charles Vickers has ruled that Prosecutor Paul Blake's association with the funeral home's co-owner would create an appearance of partiality had he stayed on the case. That's the news. Now the forecast for the rest of this evening. Partly cloudy with temperatures mid-50s. Tonight mostly cloudy, low 42. Partly cloudy tomorrow, low 60s. Tomorrow night partly cloudy, low near 42. Saturday sunny, upper 60s. And then for Mother's Day, sunny with a high near 78. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
The standard of therapy for anxiety disorders has been cognitive behavioral therapy, but Dr. Brenda Wiederhold of the Virtual Reality Medical Center in San Diego says virtual reality technology is also being used in clinics throughout the world to treat various phobias.
We've done an initial evaluation of 350 patients in our database. We've done about 4,000 sessions now with phobics that have been in virtual reality worlds. Our results, 95.5% were completers, so our dropout rate was only 4.5%. This is much lower than in traditional exposure therapies. This is very exciting for clinicians looking to see, to translate this out from the university lab to an actual clinical setting. Our response rate was 94%. So 94% of people are able to overcome their phobia, go into the real world, and use those skills. In many cases, we also see them treating their other phobias after they are taught the coping skills that we teach them prior to putting them into the virtual reality.
This is Calvin Jackson, the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
A cyclone whipped around the house the night he was born to a wealthy plantation owner. His story next on Biography for Radio.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy. You can lighten that load a little at Sam's Club. To save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull. Place your order online at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up as early as 7 a.m. the next day. Now that's teamwork. And we're proud to be a small part of your team. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
The wind that night was nothing compared to the storms the young revolutionary would later initiate.
The first was in 1953. A lawyer by training, he had switched to politics to oppose the rich who ran the island state. But as he was running for Congress, a military coup overturned the government. Furious, he too turned to violence. With a band of armed rebels, he stormed the army barracks. It was a disaster. Scores were killed and he was thrown in jail. Once out, he led a second attack. It also failed, but he escaped to the hills and gathered support among the peasants. In 1959, following a general strike, the American-backed leader who ran the country fled, and the bearded guerrilla took over. Over the next years, he clashed repeatedly with the United States. Presidents Eisenhower and Kennedy both crossed swords with his communist state, including a face-off with the Russians that sparked fears of nuclear war. Despite the guerrilla leader's promises, elections were never held. For two generations, he dictated policies that educated his people but left the nation in poverty. Now gray with age, but still uncompromising, is the Cuban president, Fidel Castro. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D. Welcome to the John Deere Lawn Care Show, Green and Growing, with Bill Clutho, John Deere's groundskeeping guru. Bill, I need to fertilize, and my cousin offered me the use of his cows.
Don't be mad. Spring fertilization is important because it replenishes nutrient reserves depleted by the first growth spurt of the season. John Deere also recommends fertilizing in the fall, 1 month before the lawn goes dormant. But rather than cows, always use a fertilizer with a ratio of about 3 parts nitrogen to 1 part phosphorus to 2 parts potassium, a mixture which promotes healthy color, blade growth, healthy root development, and increased disease resistance.
Okay, no cow. So, rotary spreader or drop spreader?
A rotary spreader works faster but less precisely, throwing fertilizer over a wider area but less at the ends of its range. With a drop spreader, go back and forth across the lawn, overlapping the wheel track enough so that no strips are left unfertilized.
Tune in again to help keep your lawn green and growing.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Yeah, let's take a little further look at this Army recruiter scandal. You know, the one that you're not hearing much about. Again, just backing up, the real beauty out of this one is the Denver high school student, editor of his high school newspaper, who got permission from his principal to do this, and he ran a sting on a couple of dirty Army recruiters. In particular, this young man, David McSwain, he taped him. They're busted. One recruiter told him how to create a diploma from a non-existent school, while the other one helped him go and buy a product to cleanse traces of marijuana and psychedelic mushrooms from his body. Because what McSwain was trying to do was find out just how low these guys would stoop to sucker somebody into George's filthy little war. Now, here's what we're dealing with. According to the Army, there were 320 substantiated cases of what it calls recruitment improprieties in 2004. That's up from 199 in 1999. Now, this includes things like threats and coercion to false promises. Oh, we're going to give you a bunch of money, son. We're going to give you a $20,000 signing bonus right here, right now. Just sign right there on the dotted line where it says you don't get no bonus. And then there were also the false promises. Oh, no, you won't go to Iraq. No, we got plenty of people in Iraq. We don't need you in Iraq. We're not going to send you to Iraq. We're going to send you to basic training, and we'll probably station you in Hawaii. And more than there were also incidents involving more than one recruiter because they tag-teamed these impressionable little kids. The number of those tag-team matches rose to 1,118 last year. That's nearly one in five of all recruiters. And then the recruiters even admit that for every impropriety that they catch, two more go uncaught, never discovered. And here's the fun part. The Army's not even bothering to punish these guys anymore. Used to be that 5 out of every 10 recruiters found to have committed these improprieties, 5 out of 10 of them were punished. Under George Bush, it's down to 3 in 10. And of course, to a certain extent, the military reflects the nature of its commander-in-chief. George Bush is a convicted criminal. George Bush is the first man to enter the White House with a criminal record. So naturally, his Defense Department's going to turn a blind eye or sort of nod and nudge and wink at these recruiters who are suckering people into the military. I mean, this is the kid in Denver. No, let's try Ohio. 21-year-old guy, fresh out of a three-week commitment in the booby hatch. Oh, Bob, you're being insensitive to people with. No, I'm not. That's just a word. Fresh from a three-week commitment in a psychiatric ward. Better. 21-year-old guy shows up at an Army recruiting station, Southern Ohio. The two recruiters signed him right up. The parents came and said, "He is crazier than a sprayed roach," the kid's parents told the recruiters. "We don't care. We got a quota to meet, man. We're happy to have him. Off to basic." He had bipolar disorder. Now, that diagnosis would disqualify him. And the parents had to raise hell all the way to the high brass before they got the enlistment canceled. If they had said nothing, that man would be in Iraq right now. Look, the sand's breathing. Spiders, spiders everywhere. There are no spiders. Yeah, they're crawling all over me, man. I'm going to shoot them. Bang, 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 bang. And, you know, you get 19 dead soldiers because this guy's flipping out because some recruiter had to meet a quota, so he put a crazy guy. He took a crazy guy into the military. Then, there's another case. By the way, those recruiters with the crazy dude, they weren't punished. And 200 miles away, Northern Ohio, another recruiter wasn't surprised. He said he's been bending and breaking enlistment rules for months, hiding police records, medical histories of potential recruits, and his commanders encourage it because they know there's no other way to meet the Army's stiff recruitment quotas. Because what does this tell you? They're signing up people with bipolar disorder. You know, roses are red, violets are blue, I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. What does this tell you? Thanks to George's filthy little blood fest, only crazy people, you'd have to be crazy to join. Look what this awful, hateful, fraudulent, dirty, filthy, lying, monstrous, jug-eared, pig-eyed lout in the White House has done to our proud military. Shame. To the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on. Thanks for waiting. Hey, Wayne.
Hey.
Hey.
Talking about the veterans benefit and David.
Yeah.
David knows how to put things.
Yeah.
He did real good, man. I'm proud to be on the same radio station that he just was, which is Radio Free Breckley, isn't it?
That would be right.
You ever notice the biggest defenders of these veteran things about, wow, I have 44. I mean, you know, these people want to come up with all these numbers. You know the same thing. There's two people in our, I don't know, you know, realm or whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
that are real defenders of them. One of them was a caller, you know.
Yeah.
Another one's a host of an earlier show and all that.
Right.
I mean, oh, they're good. The unique thing about all these defenders of what Bush, how Bush is handling the veterans thing, aren't veterans.
Yeah, funny how that happens.
Yes. And I made a mistake. I was talking to the morning guy years ago about something or other, and well, it was some subject that had to do with veterans or people that serve their country in the armed forces and that. And I asked the guy, was he a veteran? No, I'm not. Should that make a difference?
Yeah.
I let it go by. I didn't want to. Yeah, it does make a difference.
I mean, I'm not one, but by the same token,
I know you're not, but you're not defending.
Screw it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not.
You're not defending this joke of an administration. I mean, you know, the guy that's sending our children to war is an elite. It's a complete failure. He has never been successful at anything he's ever done in his life. His family was always able to bail him out, Osama bin Laden's brother, somebody, and he's revered.
Yeah, but at least he's tracking true to form. He's failing here, too.
Oh, yeah, he is. And I may remind you, I'm the guy that said, well, now we have to sit back and watch him self-destruct. It is not full 4 months yet.
No.
And they're doing a real good job. They're going quicker than I thought, and I applaud them.
They're like a 70.
If there's anything I could do to help them go further,
amen,
you know, let me know.
Yeah, they're like a 72 Pinto howling down the interstate with all four wheels wobbling.
Exactly. And I want to say one more thing. Earlier I talked about a man, a brother, a friend covering your back.
Yeah.
You know, your choice between the guy, them, the host and co-host of the morning show, or Ed.
I got it.
I'm going with Ed, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys don't know. They can't trust themselves to cover their own back.
See you later.
There you go. All right, man, I'm out of here. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I had to add that.
Sure. Thanks, Wayne.
Okay.
Later.
Bye.
All right, Jeff's back with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good, you?
Hey, I just got one thing here.
Sure.
A little thing here. It's from the VA.gov site. It says, the fiscal year 2005 Omnibus Appropriations Bill, H.R. 4814, includes $27.7 billion for VA medical care. This represents an increase of $1.26 billion, 4.7%, over fiscal year 2004. The administration also assumes that the VA will collect an additional $2 billion in third-party collections. Now, this is $3.25 billion more from 1 year. Now, one thing to remember.
Now, if you need $6 billion and you're getting an increase of $3 billion.
Who says we need six?
I do.
Well, you're not on any committees that assess this mess.
And you are?
I'm reading.
You're saying it's sufficient. You're saying that. I mean, I understand your job is to defend George Bush, even if you caught him killing kittens. Well, that is your job, Jeff. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, 60% of the maimed soldiers coming home are suffering from traumatic brain injury, and the CDC's TBI fund was zeroed out in the Bush budget. That's just a fact. Okay?
One thing you have to realize as well, that there are 1,800 veterans passing away every single day, and they are not requiring the care anymore.
Oh, my God, you are not going to go into that kind of cost-benefit analysis, are you, Jeff?
And it says, as an executive committee member of the Friends of the VA Medical Care and Health Research, the AAMC supported fiscal year 2005 recommendation for the VA medical care budget of at least $29.8 billion. This recommended $3.26 billion, 12.3% increase over fiscal year funding would cover an expected medical care inflation as well as necessary improvements to address the increasing complexity and volume of care needed by the VA's aging patient population. As in previous years, FOVA, Friends of the VA Medical Care, recommendation is consistent with the funding level recommended in the independent budget. A detailed analysis of VA funding levels developed by the four major veteran service groups and endorsed by more than 60 other organizations. And I think Veterans of Foreign Wars is one of the four major veteran service organizations they're talking about. The Foreign Wars veterans are for this. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about what they said a couple of years ago, Jeff.
Well, that's not what they're saying here.
Well, the fact remains.
The fact remains.
Jeff, hush. The fact remains. The fact remains that I am in. I support the troops. I support the maimed troops. I want them to have everything they can possibly have. I want them to have bionic limbs. Okay. I want them to be made as close to whole as they can be made before George Bush shipped them over there and ruined their lives. Okay.
Well, for one, every single person that comes, I have three, me and my wife combined have three family members that's been to Iraq, and they've all three come back and assumed their regular jobs. Every single person that goes over there does not come back messed up for life.
Okay, so you can just forget about the ones who do because you were lucky enough to have.
Well, you're trying to act like 150,000 soldiers are going to come back and need veteran constant care from a hospital.
Does science mean anything to you, Jeff?
You're saying 150,000 people are going to need constant care from this war.
Jeff, does science mean anything to you?
Sure.
Okay. In George the First's war, there were something on the order of 1 million human beings over there.
In the
coalition. Something on the order of 1 million.
Well, I'm just talking about American soldiers here.
Just wait. Of that, upwards of 50%, more than 50% of Bush War I veterans are permanently, either partially or totally disabled now as a result of their service in Bush's first war. Now, that's part of that VA budget.
That's a coalition number. It's not part of
that.
No,
that's not a coalition number.
You said 1 million soldiers were over there from all the countries.
50%.
But they weren't all our soldiers.
50% or in excess thereof of the soldiers we sent.
Well, how many,
Jeff,
did we send?
Are on permanent, partial, or permanent total disability. Okay?
Yeah.
So we can anticipate, and that's from things like exposure to depleted uranium, which we used with reckless abandon again in this filthy little war. The study in Mississippi of the veterans returning who could not father a normal baby after going to Georgia's first war. Those are realities. And the thing is, I want those people helped. The homeless veterans advocates who say that we are already seeing exponential growth in homeless Iraqi vets.
Oh, give me a break.
Okay, so it doesn't happen, Jeff. God, I'm glad you're so compassionate.
How many of them have come back?
There are no homeless.
Even over.
There are no homeless Iraqi veterans. My God, man, I'm glad you're a Republican.
I'm sure some
I support. Drag one out.
Oh.
You're gonna describe a veteran as being dragged out. I'm glad you're not in my party, man, because I'm an American and I support the troops. Good night, Jeff. This is too disgusting. This is disgusting. I'm sure some liberal could drag one out. My God. Drag one out. Find me one of them drunken, crazy Iraq homeless war veterans and drag him out here. There are people who deal with homeless veterans from Vietnam, World War II for that matter, Korea forward, and they see what's happening. And they see the support that is not there. They see the beds that don't exist for people to sleep in. These people that were sent to war because a bunch of bloodthirsty, filthy bush monkeys couldn't wait to go kill somebody for a little bit of vengeance. Did you hear that? Did you hear the Bush supporter saying that because his family members came home okay, therefore everyone else did? It is a fact that more than half of the people we sent to Gulf War I are on some form of disability and have some form of disability at this point. I want them to have what they need. I want them to have more than what they need. But I guess that makes me a dirty liberal, doesn't it? Whose side do you want to be on? The guy who supports the troops, or the Republicans who don't give a tinker's damn what happens to them after they come home and they've been all used up and can't support Republican political philosophy anymore? You pick. The show tonight was produced by the intrepid Jesse Fulmer, engineered by Randy Curbway, announced at least in part by Brian Reznor, and brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, just as these nurses at ARH are finding out, they're working for you. Also brought to you by our good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. The show, of course, is archived by Ben Birch of Elgin, Illinois, at whiterosesociety.org. Drop on by. We'll be back tomorrow night for the Friday night edition. 7 o'clock. You be here, we'll be here. Hey, Agnes!
Thank you.